Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamu alaikum. And good evening. This is Sister Cordera Aisha Muhammad for Rita Jameen's Alive. Today's date is October the 24th, 2015. And today's topic is your moral compass. Where is it directing you? This show will be unformatted, so it's not something, you know, that I have did, you know, any previous research on or, you know, formatted the show normally how I do it. First and foremost, let's give praise to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for waking us up this morning, giving us use of all our faculties, having wisdom, knowledge, and understanding to understand things that are presented for us, and understanding that all things happen by the qadr of Allah. So we are not to question those things, even if we don't understand those things. You know, everything happens by the permission of Allah. And, you know, being Muslim, we accept that 100%. So, you know, the reason why I picked this topic for today as your moral compass is so many things that I see that happens within our communities, that happens with us personally, things that we just see, you know, going on. And, you know, it makes you wonder sometimes, like, you know, okay, does this person have any morals? Like, how were they raised? You know, what was the structure of their family, so forth and so on? You know, because when you see the senseless killings, you know, the blatant racism towards other people, you know, children being murdered by their parents, you know, sexual abuse within families, things of that nature, it makes you take a step back and think, you know, what caused these people to act in the manner that they do. You know, is this some things that, you know, you say to yourself sometimes, does that person have any morals? Like, what possessed them to do that? Like, why would they do that? You know, people just acting out on their own whims, with no, I guess, no morals, absolutely no, you know, no filters, as, you know, the new saying is, you know, you have no filters, you just do as you please, and, you know, you don't care what the repercussions of your actions will be. You just don't care. You just do it. Before we get started, and, you know, I always make this available. If anybody has any comments, questions, or concerns, feel free to call in at 805-727-7013 and press 1. And I'll put you through. I can see the callers on the dashboard. So if you do press 1, I will be able to put you through, and you can speak with me live on the show as we're recording. There were a couple of headlines that I've seen, you know, in the news with this tragic thing happening here just in Philadelphia. Last week we had 2 teenage kids. One of them actually died. One was 14. And there was another young man, I'm not sure of his age, but he was shot multiple times, him and his older brother. I mean, it's this senseless, like, senseless killing, you know. It makes you wonder, like, what type of families are these children coming from that they would just pull out guns and just shoot people, knowing that the end result would be that they could make that person lose their life. Like, you're absolutely going to die. This person is not coming back. They're not going to heal. They're dead. They're going to be put in the ground, and they're going to no longer exist on the face of the earth. You know, what pushes an individual and a child? Because, you know, a lot of times, the people committing these acts are you know, teenagers, and I'm talking about under the age of 16, committing these crimes. Like, you know, we had a couple of months ago, it was a 14-year-old boy and I believe a 17-year-old boy up in the Taconi section of Philadelphia, where they were raping women, you know, coming from work. I mean, you know, what possessed or what happened to a child's framework and mind work that they would say it's okay to attack a woman and rape her and beat her and rob her and not think that it was wrong. Me personally, I don't understand that because I grew up in the time of where, you know, we knew every single person that lived on our block. We knew every single neighbor. And I'm talking about I lived on a block that had over 40 houses. You knew every single person that lived in the house. You knew their first and last name. You knew what kind of car they drove. I mean, you knew this person. And, you know, if that person saw you doing something, you know, they had the right to chastise you as far as speaking to you or, you know, even beating you. I mean, you know, it happened. And you knew not to disrespect that person or, you know, curse at that person because, you know, when your parent found out about it, that you would be punished also. So I know that the framework of the society is in a great disarray, and the structure of the family is completely gone. But I still don't understand what would make a child think that it would be okay to take someone's life. You know, like, are their parents not instructing them to say or teaching them that, you know, right from wrong, like, you know, this is wrong, you don't disrespect the adult, you know, so forth and so on. I was raised in a two-parent home. My parents were married. My mother and father remained together up until the point of his death 3 years ago. So I come from a two-parent home. Both my parents worked. My father sometimes worked 2 to 3 different jobs. Our home was paid for. We didn't have a mortgage. We didn't have a car note. And my father always purchased cars in cash. My father was the type of person that said, if you can't pay for it in cash, you don't need it. And so he would save his money, and he would pay for any and everything that he wanted with cash, and he paid for it outright, and he never owed anyone. When my father died, he did not have any debt. He died debt-free. Inshallah, I get to that point where, you know, I could have that stability, but I do implement that in my life. You know, and coming from a strong, you know, family network where, you know, I knew my grandparents, my cousins, my aunts, my uncles, you know, we had a strong family unit where, you know, like these things just didn't go on. Like, I don't know. I just feel like the society that we live in today is not even a word. I don't have a word for it. It's just in chaos. It's beyond chaotic. It's, I mean, you know, I get on, you know, the internet sometimes, and other than, you know, when I'm starting trouble on Facebook with people, don't know I do that. Other than starting trouble on Facebook with people, you know, I'm looking at various articles because I like to keep abreast of different things that's going on, not only in my neighborhood, but other neighborhoods, you know, different functions and meetings and, you know, lectures and things like that that's going on in various cities, you know, throughout the country. So, you know, and I thought to myself that maybe these are things that are generally happening like here on the East Coast, in like Philadelphia, New Jersey, Delaware, New York, you know. I didn't think like some of these things that happened were affecting like, you know, people who live in the Midwest, because it's a different structure. But in reviewing that, I see that it is. You know, I was just looking and I seen something promoted on Chicago newspaper from Chicago, and there was a 10-month-old baby that was thrown down the steps, had bleeding on the brain, broken arm, internal bleeding, was having seizures throughout the week from this incident that happened, had a broken leg, but the child is expected to survive. Alhamdulillah, that, you know, this child is expected to survive. And the mother left this child, wasn't her boyfriend, wasn't, you know, somebody, a neighbor. This was this child's blood cousin who was a female. It wasn't like a male. This was a blood relative that the police believe that this child was beat by their own blood relative. And, you know, the mother of the child was saying that, you know, the family is in disarray because, you know, some people, you know, want to do harm to this person. Other people are not believing what happened in this situation, and, you know, is this causing such a rift in this person's family? And I'm like, you know, what would possess your blood relative to do something like that to your child, a 10-month-old child at that? You know, the police said it was, you know, something that wasn't consistent with being thrown down the steps or falling down steps. They believe that this person inflicted this damage to this child on purpose, but they don't have a motive. So, you know, I'm reaching back out to the callers here tonight. And, you know, I try to make this as interactive as possible. You know, I want you to speak. I don't want you, you know, just to hear me ramble on. I mean, I can. It's not a problem to me. But I do want to keep this interactive with the caller. So if there's anybody who's streaming live on the web or on the line, you can call in at 805-727-7013 and press 1. And we're just doing random talk about your moral compass. Where is it directing you, and how are these things affecting society, you know, on a whole? Okay, I do see that we have a call from 513. I'm going to put you through.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
This is your brother Salim Abdul Mutakalim calling out of Cincinnati, Ohio.
How are you?
I mean, I'm just trying to figure out, like, I mean, that's just a Kadira, alhamdulillah. Just trying to figure out what you laughed when I came on the air. I just wanted to know what was the laughter about.
It's definitely about that post that I put up earlier. You know, that
okay,
was what it was about.
could you elaborate more on that?
I have absolutely no problem elaborating on that. I mean, if you don't mind for me to elaborate.
No, I don't. That's the reason why I called up.
Well, you know, it seems as though, you know, and
no, I don't. I mean,
I'm trying to explain for the listeners because they don't know the history.
Right. I know you keep saying
us.
We know, you know, and I'm saying nobody knows. That's what I'm saying.
No, this is why I'm about to explain.
Okay.
So for the callers who are listening, me and Brother Salim, you know, we go back and forth sometimes on Facebook with various topics, various issues. And one of the topics that we always bump heads on is the fact that I don't like African-American men. Want to make this clear, I do not have a problem with black men. I just have a problem with African-American men. And, you know, this topic escalated to a point where, you know, you said that you may find it that it was an internal issue, and I corrected you by stating that it was not an internal issue, that I come from a two-parent home. My father was black, a black man of color skin. He worked 2 to 3 jobs. We had a home that my father paid all the bills at. My mother did not have to use her money to pay any of the bills, and that lasted up until a law took my father's soul 3 years ago.
I just want to interject here. I've heard the spiel, okay? And I hungry lie, but okay, my thing is this, okay? I know I call into the show and I hear you ask all these questions why all the time, like why this, why that, why would a child, okay, take somebody's life innocently or, you know, do all these mental crazy things? Who's raising these parents? And I would like to argue that, you know, I think that it's people who get on social media and say they have a dislike for African American men and black men who create these kind of children. Is what I would say. I would argue that. And the reason why I say that is because how can a young black person love themselves when you have people who they come through a womb of a mother who will go out and publicly say, you know what, I don't like African American men. I like black men, but I don't like African American men. Okay, but African American men are black men, are they not?
Yes, they are. Absolutely.
Okay, so how can so how can you make a distinction between a black man and African American man? One you don't like, and I guess a black man you do like, but African American man is a black man, but you don't like African American men, though. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. I do not like men that are black skin that were born and raised in the United States. I do not.
And that's, you know what, and that's very insulting, and I'll tell you why. So
you go on
to a public forum, right? The Imam Alfred, right? That's
yes.
A unapologetically black man.
That's
and
great.
He provided you a platform to come on because he liked something in you as a black woman, right? But you have the audacity to go onto public, you know, Facebook and every other medium and say openly dogging and blasting black men and African American men or however you want to call them, whatever day you feel like calling them or whatever. But then you get public and want to go ahead and blast black and African American men. I just don't understand your logic. It seems to be very inconsistent, disrespectful, and I think that I just want to hear exactly why you feel this way. Where did this vitriol, this venom come from that you have for the African American man? And a lot of these African American men are your Muslim brothers in Islam as well, who deserve and have rights to be respected by you as a Muslim. So
and
I want to know how that is Islamic as well. So
okay.
I just wanted to kind of get clarity on that.
Okay, not a problem, and I'll explain this. I do not have any problem respecting African American men. I will give you your rights. You greet me, I will greet you back. I don't treat you with disdain or dislike when I speak to you if I'm dealing
but
with
you. But you publicly say on Facebook that you dislike African American men. You publicly say it every other time you get a chance. Go ahead.
Can I finish? It's
yes.
Not in a sense where if I'm dealing with you on a business matter, I'm talking about a relationship-wise as far as getting married. That is the platform that I'm talking about, not in a public or, you know, everyday, you know, type situation. I'm talking about someone for me to marry. I would not choose an African-American man. And that's what I'm referring to. It's not that I hate black men. My brother is a black man. My father was a black man. I have uncles who are black men. I have, you know, a child that I had been in his life from the time he was 6 months because we don't do the godchildren. So he's 26 years old. I've been in his life since he was 6 months, and he looks to me. So it's not that I hate black men, and this is what I have to keep reiterating for everyone. It's not that I hate them or dislike them. I'm talking about on a relationship as far as marriage level.
I do not prefer them for myself. And it has always been that way. If anybody who knows me personally will tell you, no, she never did. Never. Never have I. Never have I. And it's been because that, of course, I'm a little bit more educated than a lot of black men, African-American men, and also as far as my wage-wise, I'm in a higher bracket than a lot of African-American men, and also because I'm a plus-size sister. African-American men never looked at me, never wanted me.
And I think that's where a part of the venom you slur out comes, I think, is rooted in that. Okay, just because somebody ain't really checking for you like that doesn't give you the reason to paint the brush. Doesn't give you the reason to paint the picture of all black men as low income earners. Doesn't give you the right to paint the picture. Well, I'm just letting you know. Doesn't give you the right to paint all African American men, black men, as beneath you or inadequate for you, okay? That doesn't give you the right to do that. Just like, and also, furthermore, if you have all these black men who are influential in your life, like I said, which is the reason why I said it was internal, because if you have all these images of good black men around you, how could you possibly say that you won't choose them for marriage? It's insulting. It's like a person telling you that you can't marry my daughter because you a certain skin color, you a certain complexion. Okay, now, just because somebody ain't really checking for you, like, that doesn't give you mean the right to paint them all or all of us as, you know, inadequate or beneath you. Now, if you got weight issues, you plus size, okay. There's options out there to lose weight. I mean, but my thing is, I'm trying to figure out, like I said, if you have all these positive role models, your dad paid for his home, he was a black man, you saw a black man married to your mother doing his thing, providing, but you have the audacity to say that you don't want to choose them for marriage. Don't you think that would be insulting to your for your father who has passed away that you would say something like that, knowing he worked hard as he did?
And let me explain to you. Let me explain to you, and I'll tell you his exact situation. My ex-husband, who I was married to for 8 years, who was Trinidadian. He was an Indian from Trinidad. When my father first met him, he was adamant against him. He was adamant. He was like, I don't understand this. Why would you do this? You know, you're always doing this. And once my father got to know him and knew what he stood for and knew that he was going to treat me well, my dad loved him until the day he left this earth. Him and my father had a great relationship until my father left this earth. It's not about, and let me just step back. I want to step back to the whole weight thing. I don't care that I'm plus size. I have lost weight. I have gotten down to a size 5'6". I'm a size 14. It doesn't matter. Because either way, I'm going to have confidence and I have high self-esteem. So it doesn't matter if I'm plus size. I'm stating what African-American men look for. And I'm talking about African-American men that would be considered on my level as far as wage scale and educational-wise. You get these African-American men, soon as they get the step out of the hood, so say you, they don't look back. They look forward. And they want someone who they can post up as their trophy. Now, they're entitled
to
that.
Okay, let's assess this.
Let me ask you this. How much education do you have?
I have two bachelor's degrees.
I have two bachelor's
degrees. Okay, so you got two bachelor's degrees. Okay. And so I have three certifications.
Because I'm bilingual, and I have been at my job for 23 years. And this is not a lie. Anybody who personally knows me.
And I'm not saying this, so I'm saying you can't meet nobody qualified, a black man, African American man who's qualified on that level at all.
Not that I can.
And my thing is, where have you been looking?
Absolutely not. I mean, where I live, where I grew up at, I grew up in the hood. I grew up in the ghetto. I grew up in and around the projects of Philadelphia.
And there we go. So you wanna you've been around a bunch of low-level men in the ghetto, in the hood, but yet and still you want to sit up here and cry about ain't no man qualified for me and this and this and that. That's insulting. That's disrespectful.
How is it insulting?
It's not based on anything accurate, and it's false, and it's very false.
And you know what my father told me? He told me, he said, never settle. He said, never settle. My father told me this. He said, whatever you want to do, because my father knew how I was. He knew that I was going to do what I want to do, regardless of what anybody says. My father knew this. And he said, you're going to do what you want to do, but make sure that you do it right. And never tolerate nothing from a man. As long as I'm alive, I will take care of you and support you and do whatever you got to do. And that's what my father said until he died. So it wasn't like I didn't have a good rapport relationship with my father. Absolutely, I had a beautiful relationship with my father. So it's not like
I'm not talking about the rapport you had with your father. I'm just saying, you say all this about how good your father was, but then you have the nerve to insult and say that you won't marry a black man, and you just sit here and describe that you was in a household with a man, a black man, who took care of your mother. You don't think that that's disrespectful to him, like his legacy as a black man who stood for something? Like,
I was not married to a black man, and he knew this.
Okay, but I'm just saying, in general, though, you don't find that disrespectful to his legacy that he did?
He
was
not
a black man, an example? And then here it is, you can say that. You have the audacity to sit up here and say,
his daughter with respect. It doesn't matter the color of your skin. Like I said, my father had a very good relationship with my ex-husband. Up until he died, my ex-husband was there while we were still married. He was there. He was there the whole time that my father was going through the death process, up until he died, until he watched him be put into the ground. So my father knew who I was with, and my father said, if you ever leave that man, I don't want to meet anybody else. Regardless, my father grew to love him based on who he was. See, the thing that we have to get out of as African-American people or people of color is stop looking and generalizing people based on their skin color.
But that's what you do. You said I got the statistics here.
No,
you posted, you said most black men aren't educated. You said most black men some got criminal records. You do all the generalizing, stereotyping, using statistics, wherever you pull them from all the time. So you're saying you get out of generalization. You do that every time I look up on your Facebook, you're generalizing. Oh, African-American man ain't got this. African-American black man ain't got this. I would never marry a black man or African-American because they do this. You generalize every other second.
This is not generalizing. I said, and again, I have to make myself clear, I said African-American men. I never said black men. So a man that was born
it's the same thing.
England,
a black man, African American man, is the
it's
same
not.
Thing.
It's not.
Yes, it is.
It's not. It's
how is
not.
How is it not?
It's not. It's
how?
Not. Your environment dictates on how you.
You know what? You want to play word semantics. You want to play semantics with words.
It's not words.
African American man
not.
And black man is synonymous. Everybody knows that.
No, it's
everybody
not.
Knows
it's
that.
Not. It's not.
Okay.
It's not. Salim,
okay.
I have
then, you
other
know,
people on hold. I have other people that want to speak, so I'm going to put you
okay,
back on hold. But I'll continue. I'll continue back
okay,
with you as soon as
all right.
I reach out to these
so
other people. Okay?
You go here and say, in this post here, you say, some said I'm a S starter. No,
right.
I'm not. But if you come for me, be prepared to have your behind handed to you. I could be super petty. But this brother, Salim, my name, I'm going to show him mercy because screenshots don't lie. You're mad. I don't want you. Get over it, period. Thank me
and
later.
Salim, we
okay,
went,
well, let's go into this a little bit.
We went on it, but I'm going to put you on hold and go to someone else. Thank you for calling into Religion Means Alive. This is Quadira Aisha Muhammad.
As-salamu
alaykum. Do you have a statement? Wa alaykum salam.
Yeah. Now, I came in, I'm not going to say in the middle, but towards the beginning. I just want to say that, you know, it's a thin line between, like, preferences. You can't categorize a person or a religion or a skin color type or whatever, because just because, you know, like you said, like a lot of African American, they don't like bigger women or in your, but it comes from preference. It has nothing to do with the color of your skin. because it's like a thin line between like racism a little bit, because it's like showing some type of dislike or hatred toward a specific person, skin color type,
and
rather.
Right. No, I understand what you're saying. And the reason why I differentiate, because people say, oh, you don't like black men. My ex-husband, my children's father, is black. He's a black man. My father was a black man. I was married to an African, so from Ghana. So I don't have, again, I don't have a problem with black men. I have a problem with African-American men as far as someone looking to someone to marry. I would not marry an African-American man. And that's where people get confused. They're like, oh, you don't like black men. No, I said I don't like African-American men, which is different. Like I said, I would marry someone who was born and raised in England and was black. But I would not marry someone who was born and raised in America and is black. It's a big difference. It's a big difference. It's cultural. It's socioeconomic. It's a whole different spectrum talking and dealing with someone who comes from another country and is black. And I talked about this in great depth, the reason why I state that. And generally, you know, as you know, me and the other brother was speaking, we were speaking about, it does not have anything to do with me disliking black men. I deal with black men all the time. I deal with them. I interact with them as far as, you know,
it's more of categorizing them into a group of, because of where they're from, or, you know, where they was raised at, or, you know, in that aspect.
No,
just because someone comes from the projects or in the middle of the hood, that doesn't mean that they're not, you know, a respectable black man that's working hard to get out of that situation. It doesn't, you know, I have known black men who came from, you know, not literally, but nothing, you know, coming from the project and have made something, and one of the most respectable men that I have ever met. And just because it's from where they're from, or, you know, sometimes you can't help where you're from. Maybe they're born into living in the projects, you know, maybe their mother gave birth to them in the project and never left them, but that doesn't mean that they can't be something. Just like you said, like you were married to, I think you said an Indian, that's what you said?
Yes.
And your father, you know, basically like, I don't understand, like, why, you know, almost like if he might have put him in that category, but once he got to know him as a person,
right,
you know, then he understood more, like, oh, you know, this is the right, you know, man for my daughter, but not even given a chance to say, like, oh, no, because this person did this in my past, or this person, because he's from this area, or because he was brought up this, or his, you know, paycheck ain't my paycheck, then he's no good for me.
No, and I'm not saying that, because I actually was born and raised in the projects. I mean, people who know me, I'm from South Philly. Passyunk Projects, Casper Street Project, Wilson. I've had family that lived in the projects, you know, hung out in the projects. So I come from that. People don't understand that. People must think that I come from, I don't know where, but I grew up in the projects. I have family
that
grew up in the projects. So it's not like I'm not generalizing. And, you know, again, when, you know, Celine stated that I always use statistics, numbers, you know, men lie, women lie, numbers don't. The statistics add up. I mean, I did a whole show on the statistics of men, African-American men versus men of black descent or African descent from other countries, and the proportions don't lie. The numbers don't lie. I mean, uneducated, the numbers don't lie. You know,
men there are uneducated?
No, what I did was I did my study. I did a whole entire show on African-American men compared to black men throughout the world, and also men in general throughout the entire world. And the African-American male was severely disproportionate against black men from other parts of the world. If you compare that to black men in England or black men in the Caribbean islands, the numbers were significantly decreased as far as lack of education, lack of job employment, having a criminal background. The numbers, I mean, I can put the show
and
back
you said,
up.
But when you said that you was born, I mean, that you was, you're from South Philly Projects. The statistics
right.
say that when you from, you know, the projects or living in the projects or on some type of assistance or welfare, that you're more likely not to come get off of it or move out of the hood. But are you in the hood?
No, I am not.
So you can, right. So, but the statistics say that you are more likely not to get out of the hood. You're more likely to continue to be on welfare, a welfare recipient. You're more likely to not go to high school, graduate high school, to not go to college,
right.
to not get degrees, but that is not true. So just
right.
because this is saying it, but that does not speak
okay.
solely on you. You are, you know, speak like, you know, what assistants say, that they're more likely to, you know, be in, have a criminal record or not have a job or whatever the case is, but you can't pinpoint that person. Like, you can't pinpoint
and
exactly
can
who
I,
that person
can I
is.
Say this?
Yeah.
Can I say, I don't want to cut you off. The numbers for African American women are greater, mm-hmm. are more positive than African American males. I did the whole show on statistics. It doesn't lie. The numbers don't lie. African American men women will succeed 10 times more than the African American male. The facts are there. The facts are there. The numbers don't lie. So for an African American male to achieve what I have achieved, the chances are greatly significant. They're decreased. I did a whole show on this because I know how people feel and they want to get into their feelings about stuff, but the numbers don't lie. And
I think that it's more of, you know, not even just speaking on it, but it comes off as being, it's like, what's the word? It's insulting a little bit, you know, and I'm not saying that that's what your intention is. It just comes off insulting because it's like you're catering. Like, if I told you, well, you know, and I'm just speaking in general, but if I came to you and I'm
right.
like, oh, yeah, you know, you ain't never going to be nothing or, you know, and I'm not speaking as of today, but if you was a person that was in the projects and I came to you and I said, you know what, you ain't never going to amount to nothing because the statistics say that even though you're 10 times more likely to go to college more than men, but you're 50% less likely to go do, you know, be something more than this person. So you're not never going to amount to nothing. But here you are taking college courses. You done graduated from high school. So even though you're trying your hardest to get to change your environment, and but I'm telling you that, you know, the statistics say that you ain't going to be nothing. But I'm my own person. So,
right.
like I said, and I don't think that you are intentionally trying to be insulting to people. I really honestly don't.
Absolutely
I just,
not.
I'm just
no,
saying that it's
not.
Coming off as being insulting because, you know, if I was a black man and I heard someone say that to me, I would be insulted because what if I'm not that person, though? But I'm being categorized as everyone else in that bracket.
And you know what? I would say I'm glad you're not. I'm glad you're defeating the odds. I'm glad that you're proving me wrong, that there are black men out there. And like I said, I have brothers, cousins who've been through that struggle and are perspiring in this world despite where we came from. So, you know, like I said, until the numbers can increase from where they're from, it's going to be as it is. People can disagree with me all day long, but the numbers don't lie. They can feel how they want to feel. They can get into their feelings about stuff, but it is what it is. And until people are willing to step up and get disgusted with where they're getting and what they're not getting, the numbers are going to continue to stay where they're at. And that's what I'm saying to myself. And, you know, people are like, oh, well, you got daughters, this and that. I don't tell my daughters who they should marry. You find someone who would treat you right, and I have no problem with it. I don't care if he's green, yellow, white, black. I don't care what he is. That's their choice. I'm saying me personally, I don't like African-American men. Now, again,
a
I didn't say I
but
don't like.
That's what I mean by, like, it's such a thin line. But like, being like a preference. Like, some people like skinny women, some people like big women, some people like dark-skinned women, some people like light-skinned women. But would you categorize as, you know, well, you're more likely to go to jail, or your skin color is more likely to do this. That's become, like, a sign of racism because it's a dislike, and it's categorizing a specific skin color or, you know, person. That's what I mean. Like,
again,
if it's your preference, that's your preference.
Right. It doesn't have – skin color doesn't have anything to do with it, because people will tell you my children's father is black as night. So
I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. Not skin color. Not skin color. Even racism cannot just be a skin color. It could be from a group of people from living in a certain area. Racism is just what it is, racism. It doesn't necessarily have to be the skin color, but it could be from where a person is. I can be racist to people that are coming from the projects. I can be racist to people that, you know, are coming from across the street. I don't like that whole side. Racism does not necessarily have to be a skin type or color.
Again,
Again,
people who know me, my children's father grew up in North Philly. So, I mean, again, it's not – people want to put it into that category that it has something to do with color. Like, I have disdain or hate against black men. I absolutely do not. Now, I said I don't like African-American men, men that are black, that were born and raised in America. I did a whole show on this, and it's, I don't – I'm trying to see the time. The time
it's on your site, right?
The reason – well, yeah. Well, on I can upload the old show about this. It has nothing to do with it's a bigger story with this. When you see men who have lived in the Caribbean islands or countries other than the United States, and I'm gonna give you a brief history on it because a lot of people, you know, want to know where this comes from. African American men, 9 times out of 10, if they trace their ancestry back, it goes back to slave times. Have no problem with it. Men who were born and raised in, like, the Caribbean islands or some other country outside of the United States, they do not have the public resources, and I want people to understand this, they do not have the public resources like we do here in America. They do not have Section 8. They do not have welfare. They do not have WIC. They do not have somewhere where they can go and say, I need help, and the government's going to help them. These people in these countries have to find a way to survive. And what I mean by survive, if they don't make money, they don't eat. And when you don't eat, you starve. There's no family member you can go to help you scrape up something to get something to eat. There's no neighbor you can go to. So these men have a different perspective on survival. They have a different perspective on survival, and these men are willing to work 2, 3, 4 jobs to take care of their family. They have seen their mother and their father and their grandparents struggle to keep the family afloat. African-American people, for the most part, do not have that kind of solidity in their family. And because of that, the structure of the African-American family with black males goes back to the Willie Lynch syndrome, where slave men, the nicest one, the strongest one, was taken from plantation to plantation to sleep with the women slaves so that they could just, you know, breed, you know, new, stronger male slaves, and the father went away. There was no father there. This same premise comes about in today's society. You take away the slave master, and you create welfare. Welfare destroyed the structure of the black family, where the black man no longer had to take care of his family because Uncle Sam did it. And because of that, black women felt like, okay, I don't want to deal with a man. I don't need a man to take care of me. I can go to Uncle Sam, and he can give me exactly what he needs. I only need this black man to come into my home and give me children, and then I can send him on his way. Thus, the structure of the black man and how he is perceived in the United States is completely different than other American men. Because they don't have that strong foundation. Some of them, I'm not saying all, for the most part, they don't have that. Then you have this generation, my generation, where crack came about. So a lot of these black males in my era, parents were crack addicts. So then they went on and created kids, and it just creates that domino effect. In other countries, you don't have that with black men. You just don't have that.
You do know that a lot of countries, they are, as far as the Americans, they call us lazy, you know, Americans, because everything was just handed down to us. I mean, are you lazy? You are lazy.
Me? No. I'm absolutely not. But see, this is the thing. Also, I've noted that men from around the world, they know that African-American women are very strong. They know that. They know this. And this is why they reach out to us, because they see that strength that a lot of times African-American men bypass. They don't want to deal with, and I've had this experience, they don't want to deal with someone like me, because first and foremost, I have the education, I have the financial means, and I'm also educated. They don't want that struggle or that rebuttal. They want someone more submissive. And if you know anything about African American history, African American women always had to survive. They couldn't take a day off. And we also, if you look at the structure of the African American home, mothers, African American women will shelter their African American sons more than they do their daughters. They will push their daughters away, because it goes back to that slave mentality where they had to protect their sons so the slave master couldn't come and get them and ship them off to start creating kids throughout the various plantations. But the daughters, they didn't care where they went. It's that slave mentality that African American men are hard to break out of. And me personally, I don't want to deal with it. It's something I don't want to deal with. So that's why I feel the way that I do.
Okay.
And, you know, again, I'll try to see if I can find the archives of the show that, you know, that I did on a whole statistics. Like, I did it for African-American women. I did it for African-American men. You know, I elaborated on it, because people always say, oh, this and that. But if you have statistical, factual information, it can't be wrong. I can sit here all day and voice my opinion on something, but if I don't have anything to back it up, the same way we do in Islam, if somebody can't provide you the dalil on it, the proof where it's listed in Quran or Hadith, then you don't believe it. Like I said, I could sit here and I could take all day. I could sit here and say whatever I wanted to say out of my mouth, but the numbers match exactly what I'm saying. African American men that are incarcerated is 12 times more than men that are black throughout the other parts of the world. That's a fact.
You know, I don't understand what you're saying. I'm going to give you an example. About three or four years ago, my daughter, she was in kindergarten, pre-K at the time, pre-K or kindergarten, one of the two. But they did a survey, and they wanted to know, was my child, did she come from a two-parent household? And all the kids took it. And they wanted to know the income and so forth and so on.
Yep.
And I said, well, why? They said, well, the statistic says that if you come from a one-parent household, you're more likely to go to jail. So we want to plan for the future and build more jails if needed.
Yep.
Already they were looking at my child as an inmate.
Yep, absolutely. This is what they do, because if you have a black child and if your black male child is not reading on a third-grade level by the third grade, they say, okay, before that child hit 18, we're going to already have them in the system. This is what they do. But this is why we have to build that structure and that foundation up to say, my child is going to beat the odds. I'm not going to let my child go down that road. But the way that this society is built up, this society is going to hell in a handbasket. You have no structure. You have no structure in the home. Like, I mean, when I grew up, we had to wait till my dad get home from work to eat. And when we ate, we all sat down at the kitchen table and we ate dinner with our parents. You ate what my mom cooked, and that was it. Like, you know, it was, kids don't even have a dining room table or a kitchen table. They don't have this. Their parents out in the street doing whatever, they cooking a meal from the microwave. You know, like today's society, this is why I said the moral compass, where is it directing you? It's because we can sit here and talk and everything and bicker about whatever goes on, but what is going to change? What is going to change after this? What's going to happen? After we hang up the phone and we go about our lives, what's going to change? What's going to change? I mean, I'm definitely going to still feel the way I feel. I always have. Anybody who knows me knows I have felt this way forever. So it's not nothing new. It's probably new to people that are listening to the radio show because they don't know me personally. But anybody who knows me personally will say, yeah, she always do it like that. She always did that. I went to a predominantly white junior high school and high school. My mother took me out the hood. She said, you're not going to these schools in the hood. You're going out there. She put me on a bus. I was a part of the desegregation program, and she put me on the bus, and she sent me out there from the time I was in sixth grade to the time I was in 12th grade, and it was the best thing she ever did. Best thing she ever did. Why? Because I know how to interact with people of other races and not feel intimidated or scared to deal with them or to look them directly in their face and tell them what I think without no fear. Now, it's time when I work with people in different situations and they're African American and they won't even look me in my eye because, not because I'm somebody to be feared or anything, absolutely not, but they don't know how to look. They don't learn that. They learn to be meek and humble and not to look anyone in their face and speak to them directly. And it's a sad fact that our society thinks like this. You know, and I'll give a quick example of how that worked for me. Where I live at years ago, I've been in where I live at for the last 18 years, I've been living where I live at, and it used to be predominantly white. There was no African. I was the third African-American that lived on my block. When I sent my kids to the elementary school, it was probably like, I want to say about five black children in the entire school. Best school district in the state of Pennsylvania, this school district had. Best one. This is why I moved out here, so that my kids could have a better education and a better life and a better exposure to people of all races. I didn't want them to go to a predominantly African-American school. I wanted them to go to a school with children that were mixed, that had different races, different ethnicities, so that they was exposed to that. And one time there was a situation where my middle daughter was actually pulled into the principal's office, and so he said, we're going to suspend her, this and this. And when I went up to the school, I was like, wait a minute, you know, I don't know what's going on here, but, you know, I need to figure out what's happening with this situation. So when I get up there to the school, I see the principal yelling. When I say yelling at this boy's mother. She was African-American. She looked a little bit younger than myself at that time. She was in tears, crying. This white man was standing over her, yelling to her, get your son out the school, because he felt like, I can talk to her like that. And she's not going to rebuttal. She's not going to say anything. She's going to take what I tell her. So when it came time to me, and he pulled me in the office, and he wanted to start screaming and everything, I looked at me and dead in his eyes, and I said, look, I don't know, you may be used to talking to them like that, however you're talking to them, you're going to talk to me with respect. And I looked this man dead in his eyes, and I articulated my words so that he knew I wasn't someone to play with. I never had a problem out that principal again. And again, when I would go up there to take my daughter's lunch or whatever, I would still see him standing over parents, African-American women, having them cry in the office. But when he seen me, he knew he couldn't do that. Why? Because I was exposed to this at an early age to learn how to deal with people in different situations. And, I mean, is that true or factual for everybody? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Every situation is different. But, again, everybody's entitled to their own feeling on things. People took the whole post about took this whole thing about me, you know, me having a disdain for African-American men. That wasn't even the topic. That wasn't even the topic that I had posted. It was about polygyny. The whole topic was about polygyny, and they jumped on it and rambled on it and took it out of something else that really wasn't there. So, you know, I just had to make my point with that. But anything else you want to have to say? If not, I'll put you back on hold, and I'll go take another caller. Okay, wa alaikum assalam. Okay, I got one more caller. Thank you for calling Into Religion Means a Lot. This is Sister Cordera Aisha Muhammad. Feel free to speak.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
How are you? This is Sonia.
Oh, I'm good. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Now, alhamdulillah, I'm so pleased to hear you on the radio and trying to spread some knowledge. It's so appreciated. I'm a little upset, no offense to the brother. He took it all off another direction. That is not what I was looking for this evening. However, I understand where you're coming from, basically, especially about the African-American men. That's all I have dealt with in my experience, but I do understand what you're saying as far as, I think it's conditioning, like.
Right, absolutely.
So I understand, and I understand that black men from other countries don't, it's something that's, I mean, it's almost like a stamp, like a brand, you know, that unfortunately the black American guys have to deal with. But anyway, I wanted to hear more about the moral issues that you were talking about, and how outlandish, how just gruesome people are getting these days with what they're doing to people, and how these babies and kids are mistreated and hurt and murdered and stuff. And I'm just sitting here while I was listening to that other stuff. I was like, you know, really, like, that's a good question. I couldn't begin. All I could say is, you know, unfortunately, it doesn't seem like it's going to get any better. You know what I mean? It's like just a digression or just falling apart, basically. That's good. Huh?
No, I was going to say, and, you know, I agree with you. And now I'll give you a quick story. I'll give you a quick story on a situation that happened. My girlfriend, who's African-American, she went into, you know, Chinese store in her neighborhood. If anybody know Overbrook Park section of Philadelphia, you know, it's a fairly nice area. It's not, you know, not a high rate of crime or anything like that. It's a nice area of Philadelphia to live in and raise your family in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she went in there to go get, you know, get something to eat, and it was this young African-American man with his friend who was also African-American. He had his pants hanging down. So, you know, my girlfriend, you know, she said to him, she's like, hey, you know, young man, why don't you pull up your pants? You know, you should have had your pants hanging like that. The young man turned around and said to her, "How about I shoot you in your face?" Wallahi. He said, "How about I shoot you in your face?" And she said she got taken aback by that, and his friend had to calm him down, like, "Yo, man, chill. Like, you know, the sister, she just, you know, telling you something." He was like, "Look, if my own mother don't care about what happens to me, why should she care about what happens to me?" That's a true story. That happened. And my girlfriend said she was so shaken up by that. Like, she was just trying to encourage this young man. And she said she said it in a joking way. And I know her, and she probably did. She probably said it in a joking way where he wouldn't have took no offense to it. But he got so turned up that he said he was going to shoot her. And she said, "I believed he had a gun. And if his friend wouldn't have calmed him down." And, you know, his friend apologized, like, "Man, he didn't mean nothing by it," or whatever like that. If his friend didn't calm him down, I believe he would have shot her in her face for telling him to pull his pants up.
I don't know. I'm not sure why you sounded so surprised, but we have.
No, I'm not surprised by it. I'm absolutely not surprised by it. You know, it just shows that we have to start somewhere. And if we can't start with, you know, like I've seen different posts and different things on Facebook and other places where, you know, they're saying that the generations that's here are lost. We have to now start with the next generation from birth. Like, we can't fix this because it's so far gone. It's so out of control. It's nothing that we can do except let them be lost and start over. That's sad. That's sad that, you know, everything has escalated to this point in time where you are just willing to give up on everybody and everything because it's just so far gone. You know, I look at these videos where they had these little girls 2 and 3 years old twerking in the video, and the parents think this is cute. They think it's cute.
Think that's cute. It's not.
You get their sons cursing, calling girls bees, and they recording this stuff. And they think that is acceptable behavior, and they think that is cute. And then when they go to school, these little girls and boys cuss their teachers out, and of course the teachers nowadays, they can't discipline the children, because I know back in my day, you would have got crap. They didn't play that in school. But now the teachers can't put their hands on you. They can't even break up fights no more. So, you know, you get this 5-6-year-old child cussing out a teacher, and the teacher is just constantly suspending them because the schools, they don't tolerate that no more. They just put you out. Then they put you in a segregated group because you can't be taught. Then they want to label you with ADHD, put you on drugs, put you on special programs because the schools get special funding for all that stuff, and continue to label you. And are setting a foundation to say that this type of behavior and these types of need to stop. Where are they? Who are teaching these children these behaviors? Because, yeah, you can see, like I tell any and everybody, I know my kids ain't angels, and I know that they used to do stuff, but they knew if they seen somebody I knew, they better stop. They know that they couldn't do that in front of me, that I would correct them, and they knew I didn't tolerate that type of behavior, and they knew I didn't tolerate those type of things. And anybody who seen them came back to me and said something, that my kids knew they were in trouble. So if you don't have that foundation where somebody can tell your kids something, your kids are going to do what they want to do and think that's morally acceptable to do out here in the society. And if you have kids like that who can't take no direction, you're going to have a chaotic society. You're going to have a chaotic society that thinks that they can talk to people any way they want to, they can do whatever they want to, and they don't care what the repercussions of their actions happen. They don't care. They don't care. So, you know, these are things that we have to try to correct. But, again, as we see, it diverted totally off this topic of what I was trying to do. But I had to clear up those issues and misconceptions again. And again, mm-hmm. everybody's entitled to their own opinion, to feel how they want to feel, and, you know, deal
Absolutely.
With who they want to deal with. It's,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's your right. And we all know, being Muslim, Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam said that no Arab is better than the black, and no black is better than the Arab. So, I mean,
mm-hmm.
again, I had no issue with black men. I just said African American men. They
right.
are, and I'll say this, and some people may get mad, they're damaged. They're damaged. They're damaged almost beyond repair. And I feel like I don't have the time, I don't have the energy to try to fix them. I don't. I don't. I don't. I don't. You should want to fix yourself. If you listen, if African American men are listening to this, yeah, you should be fed up. You should be mad that you go and correct it. You should be so fed up. You should be so angry with me that you go out and correct it. Stop getting locked up. Stop creating babies out of wedlock, having children in the bed. Stop doing it. Stop using these drugs. Stop, you know, doing what you're doing negatively. Prove me wrong. That's all I'm saying. Prove me wrong. Correct it. Get so angry. Get so angry that you correct it, that you stop doing what you're doing. Anybody, you tell your kids, oh, listen to this sister. She don't like black men. This is why. You make sure you don't do that. That's all I'm asking. Get so fed up that y'all want to change. That's all I want to do. And then maybe down the road, you know, there's other people like me. People just don't want to speak out about it. It's people like me. People are not going to be as direct in front and forward as I am. Because I say what I want to say. And I don't care. I don't care if you don't like me. You don't pay my bills. So I don't care. You know, you don't have to sleep in the bed with me. So why should I care about what you think? Who I should marry and who I should lay down with. You're not going to stand on the day of Yama Kiyama with me in front of Allah. You're going to be worried about your own sins and everything else you got going on. So, you know, again, like I said, I don't have a problem dealing with African-American men in business situations. I deal with them all the time. Then, you know, how I got this show is because how I feel. It wasn't because, oh, you know, I didn't make this known from the beginning how I felt. This is how I got the show. This is why Imam Alfred gave me these three slotted shows for Saturday, Monday, and Thursday. You can't always, everybody wants you to walk the line with them. I'm that person who's going to create their own path and go about things. This is how I am. This is how I always been. I think outside the box. You say, oh, you can only go this far. No, Quadir is looking for another way around it, in between it, upside down, however, underneath it, however I got to go. But you're not going to tell me that I got to just stay within this box. That's not who I am. And I can't see myself being anywhere else. And anybody who knows me personally knows I'm this person. This is not a front for the radio, or this is not a front for Facebook. Everybody knows I'm like this. Anybody will tell you, yeah, that's her. She crazy. That's her. They'll tell you. My family, friends, anybody who knows me personally will say that's 100% her. That's what she do. So, you know, it's new to people, you know, that are listening on the radio. It's new to people who are, you know, just getting, you know, acclimated with how I do things, but it absolutely has no, you know, premise. And Islam, really, you know, you be with whoever you want to be with. For women, as long as they're, you know, a male Muslim man, and for, you know, Muslim men, if she's a woman of the book or a Muslim, you can be with her. I mean, it doesn't say anything about color, and you can choose who you want to choose. You know, it says in Hadith, you marry a woman for four things: her beauty, her wealth, her family, and her knowledge. So, I mean, you know, people can feel how they want to feel, but it ain't going to change. So, and you know, we have talked.
Yeah.
So you know how I am. I'm very candid about stuff, and I'm very forward and frank about stuff. So, and I don't I don't sugarcoat nothing. I tell it like it is. But mm-hmm. I follow Quran and Sunnah behind it. Whenever I'm giving someone advice, I make sure I include the hadith or the Quran behind it, right or wrong. I have
absolutely.
Done that with you, right? That's the only point that I'm trying to make. You know, I'm mm-hmm. not trying to say that I'm this super pious Muslim. Absolutely not. I know I have sins. There's false things that I have to work on. Absolutely. But, you know, nobody's going to change how I feel. Nobody's going to change that. That's just who I am. So, again, I appreciate you calling in. I'm going to get ready to wrap up the show in a few minutes. But, again, thank you again for, you know, calling. And, you know, I'll talk to you at another time, inshallah.
Inshallah. Jazakallah khair.
Wa yaka.
Salaam alaikum, sis.
Wa alaikum, salam. So I want to put it out there. This has been a very interactive show. It did digress off of the topic of, as far as your moral compass, where is it directing you? I probably would need to do another show, just trying to keep it, you know, formatted where it needs to go and keep it directed, you know, on a positivity of, you know, the topic at hand. You know, again, we as Americans, and I'll put it like this, we as Americans, African-American, whatever have you, if you're here in the United States, there's different rules and laws that we have to abide by. We all know that. Is it going to be fair to everybody? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. But what we can do to start to make a change and stop some of these things from happening is to change our behaviors. You know, as far as being more interactive with our kids, you know, you see these parents, they go out there, they go to these clubs, they do everything, they, you know, figure out everything, how to get into their man's inbox and all this and that, but they don't check their kids' homework. They don't go to PTA meetings. They're not interactive with their children. They don't check their children's homework. You know, they're not feeding their children a healthy meal. You're giving them some chicken nuggets that's pre-processed and some french fries that's pre-processed versus sitting down and actually peeling some potatoes and cooking them or boiling them, which is more sustainable and, you know, better nourishment for them. Instead of doing chicken nuggets, cut up some chicken breast, bread it, and fry it. I mean, you know, why do you have to do this pre-process stuff? Everybody wants to move through this world so fast but don't want to accept the repercussions of what happens when you're doing all these negative things. You know, these kids aren't learning. And if you're not vocal and active in your children's school, nobody's going to care. Nobody's going to care about what happens to your child. They're there for a paycheck. So if these parents aren't vocal and visible in these schools, this is what's going to continue to happen. I can't see any positive role models in music. So to keep, you know, polluting the children's minds with these videos, this music, these lyrics, I mean, if you listen to the stuff, it's pure garbage. Why would you allow your 2 and 3-year-old to learn this stuff and learn how to do a dance? You know, I've listened to lectures where I have heard Emam say, you know, your kids don't even know the al-Fatiha, but they know how to nene, which is absolutely correct. You know, listening to Shadi Muhammad, love the brother. May Allah continue to preserve him because he has a great knowledge on a lot of things. And, you know, coming from the inner urban city, you know, he can relate and speak to these things, you know, educatedly. Some of the things I've heard in his lecture is 100% on point. You know, African-American Muslims do not push their children to learn Quran and Arabic. They don't. You don't see these children in the masjid learning to speak Arabic and learning Quran, to read and recite Quran. You don't see that. But they'll sit up there and make videos of their kids doing the nene and think it's acceptable. But then wonder why your kids grow up to be disrespectful. You got to start early with kids. Kids absorb a lot at a great detail before the age of five. From the age of 5 to 10, that's where they're very, you know, it's shaky because they've seen so much, and now they're starting to implement those things. This is why in Hadith, it says that by the age of 7, children should start learning, you know, how to pray. You know, they should be getting up. They should be, you know, in the ranks with the parents praying. By the age of 10, you should beat them. If they're not doing it, not beat them as far as, you know, violence where they're bruised and all things like that, but they should know that when they hear the adhan and then they hear the akama, that they should have made wudu and they should be in the ranks. You know, but we don't do this. Some of the parents aren't even praying. So how can you accept this, you know, the example for your child? These are things that we have to take a deeper focus on, and we have to, you know, really say, do we want to change or do we want to have things remain the same? Do we want to continue to see African-American men killed because they were driving somewhere or they look wrong or they move wrong? You know, now they're killing African-American women. There's no pics, as they say. There's no pics. So, you know, everybody is, you know, target practice. Everybody can get killed. You know, but if we are not fundamental in our own society, starting with our home first, and, you know, I always say this during the call, that you have to set the foundation first before you can build on anything. If you have a shaky foundation, everything that you build on top of that will crumble. It won't be stable. It will have no stability. So, you know, you have to build a foundation first, so that starts with home, and then you have to work your way up, and that's in your community, and then work your way around, and that's the larger community. That's the environment that you're in. Again, I grew up in and around the project. I grew up in South Philadelphia, grew up in West Philadelphia. Were we rich? No. We didn't want for anything. But to appreciate those things. And sometimes, absolutely, yes, did my parents irritate me and get on my nerves? Absolutely. But do I respect them for it? Absolutely, man. I appreciate it more, especially once I had children. I knew why they did the things that they did, and I instilled that into my children to rear their children the same exact way. But if you don't have that lineage to set that foundation of how you were reared as a child, again, it's going to be a hard time trying to correct it. So, again, I thank everyone for joining me tonight on Religion Means Alive. Your moral compass, where is it directing you? Hopefully, inshallah, we can, you know, revisit this topic and not digress onto other things. Again, I appreciate everybody for joining Religion Means Alive for today, which is October the 24th, 2015. If you want to contact me directly, you can reach me at 610-836-2120. That's my business phone. You can also email me at qamrma@gmail.com. Listen in for the show, inshallah, on Monday. I don't have a top exactly yet, but I may do it on backbiting because I know I said I promised to talk on that as well. So I may do Monday's show on backbiting if I don't get something else to fit the slot. So, again, thank you for joining me tonight on Religion Means Alive. Assalamu alaikum and have a good evening.